Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Lauren Sarabia. Lauren is a member of Temple Beth El in Eureka, and we're going to talk a little bit about Jewish food traditions and kosher food laws. Lauren, where was your family from before they came to the United States, and how did that kind of impact what your food traditions are?
Well, both sets of my grandparents came from Eastern Europe. Germany, Poland, Russia were the main countries, but all my grandparents were actually born in the U.S., so I was influenced a lot by my grandmothers because I was pretty close to them growing up and got to be there when they cooked a lot. My dad's mom was really known for her baking. And as I've learned more about cooking from and baking from different areas, I really see her German influence more and more. When I think of something she made, and sometimes I see it in a restaurant or a magazine, I'll go, oh my gosh, that was German. So I think just being, you know, at their apron strings a lot.
Yeah. You know, I think that's one of the things that I notice about in the United States. We seem to think that Ashkenazic Jewish food traditions are what Jewish food traditions are just because so many people came to this country from Eastern Europe. So we think of things like bagels and knishes and things like that. What sorts of things do you think of?
Oh, yeah, very similar. Well, that same grandma was really known for her strudel, you know, so that was Austrian, German kind of influence there. Blintzes, one of our family favorites. Different kinds of stews, too. There's something called a kollet, which was a slow-cooked food that's really well-known in Eastern Europe. Bialys, knedla, you could go on and on and on.
And so one of the things I think we found is, as I was kind of, you know, looking into this is, you know, Jews really have traveled throughout the world. And so really there is no just one Jewish food tradition anymore.
Yeah, that is so true. Boy, because Jews had to leave their homes and they migrated all over the world, really. So there's such a strong influence of, you know, Arabic, Syrian, Jordanian. As I've gotten more involved in the food world, I've met more people that are from the Sephardic background. And some of their foods, to me, are really interesting. You know, they use a lot more seeds and flowers and berries.
And Sephardic Jews are more from, like, the Spain and Portugal, that region?
Like the Iberian Peninsula. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, from reading, you know, too, about even kosher food law, any style of cooking can be kosher. So you can have Chinese food that's kosher. So, you know, it's all around the world now.
It really is. It's true.
One of the things that we talk about is being kosher. I mean, I think we use that word so much in our society just as a word to, that means correct. Is it kosher to do that? Yeah, you know, is it copacetic? Is it kosher? You know, it's kind of interchangeable with that. But there really is Jewish food law that is called kosher. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It's actually called kashrut. Yeah, it has to do with the way an animal is slaughtered. It has to be slaughtered by a particular person who's trained, and that's their role. It has to be in a kosher kitchen, so it's official. A lot of people think that a rabbi's always standing there saying prayers over the food. I think a lot of times there are rabbis involved, but I think it's more of the way this slaughterer does it. And so it has to be slaughtered with one slash, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a very humane way of slaughtering, and a lot of places that aren't Jewish have used those techniques in their slaughterhouses because, I mean, I think even the USDA even exempts Jewish slaughtering techniques from having to meet some of their other guidelines because they're so humane and so clean and do the job really well.
Yeah, that's very true.
Now, some of the research that I've done has kind of led me to believe that, you know, some of the traditions of kosher food preparation really have to do with just basically trusting the Torah, basically trusting that, you know, this is something that you should do, that you should show obedience to God. Really don't go back to any sort of health reasoning why the traditions are done.
Yeah, I think originally that's true. These were the commandments handed down to Moses from God, a whole set of laws, rules of how to eat, what to eat. I mean, there's There's extensive lists of types of birds that can be eaten and types of creatures from the sea that can be eaten, what cannot be eaten, and ways of how to slaughter something.
Okay, let's talk about the animals first.
Okay, well, you're not allowed to eat something that preys on another animal. So any animal that would kill something for their own diet is not allowed. And basically because it's not clean. If an animal kills another animal, it's not clean. There's a lot of blood.
Uh-huh.
And also, you're not allowed to eat an animal that, obviously, that there may be disease. Not permitted to eat pigs or rabbits, horses. As far as birds go, owls, storks, ostriches are forbidden. Can't eat an animal that's been shot or killed with a gun.
Oh, really?
Because of the way it bleeds out, evidently.
Huh.
That I read that, but then I know there's people who are hunters, and I think there's hunting comes up in the Torah sometimes, too. So I really don't know enough about that, to be honest.
Okay. What is the reasoning behind animals with cloven hoofs being able to be eaten?
They're permissible because animals with cloven hooves, they can't hold their prey, so they can't be carnivores. They can't kill it themselves.
Okay.
So it goes back to there's the blood issue. So we eat beef.
And then of the animals, like of the cattle, like the lower part of the animal is not eaten. I kind of found some information that it said the sciatic nerve and its adjoining blood vessels may not be eaten. And the process of removing that nerve is time-consuming and not cost-effective. So many kosher slaughters sell the hindquarters to non-kosher butchers so that, you know, it's actually consumed, but it's just not consumed by people who observe the
It's great, so it's not
kosher.
Wasted at all.
Yeah.
That's true. And when they slaughter the animal, they have to sever both the trachea and the jugular vein. So creates less pain.
Uh-huh.
Well, we don't know how much pain an animal has, but the least amount of pain possible.
Yeah. Okay. So I think reduces the stress of the animal too, and they don't have all those hormones in them that can make them not as tasty. And then, so let's talk about eating meat and dairy together, because that was something that I really didn't know a lot about. And I talked to an aunt of mine who talked about separating the silverware and separating the pots and pans. So that kind of gets, you know, a little more complex.
Yeah, you don't mix meat or dairy together ever, people who are devout at keeping kosher. People do have a whole sets of dishes that they use for dairy or for meat. And then at Passover, one of our main holidays, they even have another set of dishes that they use. So you can find three or four sets of dishes in someone's home.
And so when you say you don't eat them at the same, you know, you wouldn't eat them on the same plate at the same time, how much of a time would go by before it would be okay to eat the next item, other item?
There is a certain amount of time, and I don't know how many hours it is, but there is definitely a certain amount of time. So like for each meal, you would not mix them. I think, uh-huh. You know, breakfast, you could have a dairy meal. Lunch could be meat.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's not like in a whole day, you have to keep one or the other.
Okay. And you can eat dairy and eggs together, which is kind of interesting.
And you can also eat dairy and fish together as well.
Right, because that beautiful bagel with the lox and cream cheese is perfectly okay and delicious.
What would we do without it?
What would we? 21% of American Jews report that they keep kosher in their home. Do you keep kosher in your home?
No, I do not.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And there is a small community of Jewish families here in Humboldt County that do, and I know they purchase their meat together from an outside source.
Okay.
So that they know it's kosher.
All right. This was very interesting, learning more about kosher food laws and Jewish cooking traditions. Thank you so much. This is Jennifer Bell, and I've been speaking with Lauren Sarabian.
Thank you very much.
Grapes and the cakes. Hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.